Blog Talk Radio.
There's a better world that's coming. Tell you why. There's a better world that's coming. Tell you why. We will beat 'em on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world that's coming. Tell you why. There's a better world that's coming. Don't you see? When we'll all be union and we'll all be free. There's a better world that's coming. Don't you see?
Good evening, my friends. This is Rick Spezak, news director of Progressive News Network. I want to welcome you on behalf of myself and my co-producer, Ms. Mickey Royce. She's down with a little bit of throat challenge right now, so I want you all to send her a good positive wish that her throat returns to its normal healthy manner so that she can speak out with that clear and distinct voice for all the good progressive causes that she does. Again, I want to thank you, and I want to tell you that tonight we've got some really special guests. Susan Nylon, of the Nylon Report. She broadcasts out of Sarasota, and that's WSRQ 106 FM and 1220 AM Sarasota every day. Make sure you check out her show. It's also available online. That's the Nylon Report. I also want to remind you that next weekend, Sunday the 18th, the 39th Annual Susan B. Anthony Feminist of the Year Award Luncheon will be held at the Boca Raton Country Club, 17751 Boca Club Boulevard. You want to make sure that you're there supporting now, supporting the fine women of Florida and these United States. I want to let you know I've had the good fortune to attend two really wonderful progressive groups this weekend. Friday evening, I was down in Boca with some good people doing a fundraiser for Fort Lauderdale's Occupy, and even though they're not camped out, they are doing good work every day. We heard some real good news about the progress they're doing. They actually managed to stop a foreclosure, and we support them in that, that's for sure. Also, I had the good fortune to meet up with some good people from the Martin County area who held a wonderful evening event at the home of Miss Denise White, a hard charging progressive activist in the Martin County area, a wonderful woman and a hard-working progressive. She's involved in the Progressive Caucus. She's involved in Democratic politics. A real fine steward of our liberty. So make sure you support the good progressives that you know and those around you. I also want to mention our other colleagues and progressive activists in the media. Diane G. and her Wild Wild Left show. The incomparable Gwen Holden Berry of Here Must Be Monsters. And our good friend Amy Tidd up in the Melbourne area. Diane, I think, broadcasts every night. Gwen broadcasts every night and has a special the hour before ours from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Amy's show is Saturday mornings, if I'm not mistaken, and make sure you tune into these stations and support them and their sponsors. You know, we reach out and try to give you the good news and the things you need to know, and it's always good to hear from our listeners and let them know that you care and this information is important to you. Okay, on the other news front, so don't forget, next Sunday, March 18th, Boca Raton Country Club. You want to get in touch with Palm Beach now, and they can get you your tickets, okay? That's 12 to 3, March 18th, the 39th Annual Susan B. Anthony Feminist of the Year Award Luncheon. Make sure you're there. Okay, also I got some other good news. The good people of the Progressive Coalition, progressives who are working very hard across the state, from Tallahassee to the Keys, from the East Coast to the West Coast, from the Panhandle, all the way down to the shores of Key West. We're trying to make the Democratic Party move in the right direction. They're in the process of finalizing the ruling on their logo. So So they'll be branding themselves and all the other good people who work with them. Make sure you support the Progressive Coalition, good people who are trying to bring the Democratic Party along. Help them remember their roots. Okay. Another story I want to let you know about is the indefinite detention provisions under the NDAA. The Great Attack on Civil Liberties, you may not have heard too much about. This is from an article by Ariel Schneller. President Barack Obama signed the 2012 National Defense Authorization Act. Not everybody's kept up with this. The NDAA contains many routine provisions related to defense spending. There are two particular provisions that should deeply trouble any American concerned with the encroachment upon civil liberties that have been the hallmark of the post-9/11 America. Section 1021, you want to write that down, Section 1021 affirms that the 2001 Authorization for Use of Military Force, AUMF, authorizes the detention of anybody whom the president determines was involved in the attacks of 9/11, as well as detention of anybody who substantially supports or is a member of Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, or, quote, associated forces. This detention is authorized as long as the hostilities authorized by the AUMF are ongoing. Of course, because the battle against Al-Qaeda may never end, Section 1021 is essentially a de facto authorization of indefinite detention. Of course, once upon a time, the Magna Carta guaranteed that we all had the right of habeas corpus. And unfortunately, not enough people have stood up to this profound erosion of the rights of habeas corpus, the right to a trial by a jury of your peers, the right to an attorney to represent your situation, and also, of course, a right to know what charges you're being held under. The codification of indefinite detention, says Mr. Schneller, is chilling because it represents how quickly and drastically our nation's discourse about civil liberties has changed in just a few short years. Fewer than 4 years ago, we elected a president who explicitly and strongly campaigned on closing Guantanamo, the infamous facility where terrorist suspects were being indefinitely detained. Now, that same president signing a bill codifying some of the practices against which he had so vigorously campaigned. As long as George Bush was indefinitely detaining terrorism suspects, Democrats could criticize it, as it represented the worst of the Bush regime, and the civil libertarians could decry it as a panicked overreaction to 9/11. I urge you strongly to look into that. Also, I want to bring to your attention the fact that tonight we want to take a few minutes to honor the one-year anniversary of the Fukushima. And I won't call it an accident. I'll call it a disaster, because they knew better. They could have taken precautions. But it's okay now, because the monkeys of Japan and the college students of Japan are being used to monitor radiation. Scientists in Japan are struggling to assess the consequences of Fukushima amid continuing concerns over high levels of radiation. Help is at hand in the form of the area's wild monkey population. Radiation levels in the woods near Fukushima nuclear plant in the aftermath of nuclear disaster is now going to be measured with the help of primates. Researchers from Fukushima University have designed special collars for the monkeys, which will feed information to scientists. Each collar contains a small radiation survey meter and a GPS transmitter and can be unclipped by remote control. Japan's Kyoto News Agency reported on Sunday. This will enable the research team, led by robotics professor Takayuki Takahashi, to recover them and collect data in 1 or 2 months after releasing the monkeys back into the wild. Currently, radiation is measured using helicopters, a measure which has proved incapable of obtaining most accurate estimates. The project is designed to check radiation exposure in wild animals. The monkeys will allow the scientists to compare radiation levels on the ground and in the air, as they spend much of their time sitting high up in trees. A two-month project is set to kick off this spring. As you may also know, I reported last week that 52 of 54 reactors are shut down in Japan. And another story from the radiation scene, Anti-nuclear protests took place in Tokyo Sunday as Japanese society is growing more and more opposed to nuclear energy following the catastrophe at Fukushima Daiichi. Following the worst nuclear disaster since Chernobyl, not a single community in Japan has agreed to restart reactors, which were taken offline. The government says that Fukushima is stable now, that tsunami knocked out the plant's cooling system, leading to a meltdown of three reactor cores. Some 100,000 residents who lived in the vicinity of the plant remain in temporary shelters or with relatives. Moreover, and this will be hard to believe, Tokyo Electric Power Company, the operator of the crippled Fukushima plant, have been making slow progress in paying compensation to those affected by the nuclear crisis. The company has so far only paid a quarter of some 1.7 trillion yen that they promised in financial aid provided to the company by the Japanese government. The payment compensation is hampered by a complicated set of procedures put in place by TEPCO for people applying for compensation and a lack of flexibility in approving payments. Let's see, they're making it difficult to get those payments. That's shocking. But there's a lot more where that come from. We'll talk about it later when I'm joined by Luz Cuevas, a Progressive Push, a fantastic organization preparing people to run for office. So let me continue. I want to bring on another guest of ours tonight, Susan Nylon of the Nylon Report. And I think you'll find this very informative and entertaining. Ladies and gentlemen, the Susan Nylon interview. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome Susan Nylon. Susan, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Richard.
Susan, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself?
Oh, boy. I don't think you have that much time. Well, I think you're only curious about the latter years since we started to get to know each other. I was your typical working mother, ran a company, and a few years back saw a big change in the security of our future. Mm-hmm. And I was running a construction company in Florida, and one by one, I saw all the people that I had respected essentially go out of business like a house of cards. And this was around 2008.
Uh-huh.
And in addition to that, I have a young son at home who started at the age of 8 becoming very aware of the world around him.
Uh-huh.
And while I was basically trying to save my business, my son was coming home every day and letting me know what was happening outside of the small world that I had been existed in with. Not only his, he was very concerned about the plight of the polar bear. He became very active in a group called Greenpeace. He became very aware of politics around him. And every day he would come home and we'd sit at the dinner table and I'd ask him how his day was and he just wanted to talk about issues. And
God bless him.
I was like, here is an 8-year-old and I'm clueless and he knows more about things in the world around me. And, you know, I had been what I had thought was a quote-unquote activist in the sense, I call it an armchair activist, where
sure.
I'd get the emails and I'd like it or I'd respond it or I'd send off my email address in support or something. But that was essentially to the extent of it. But then at that point in time, I saw how passionate my son was and I thought, well, you know what, a good mother would indulge their son and get more involved with things of interest. And at that point, that's what he was interested in. So a chance meeting in a park one day with a young man who was actually a Greenpeace activist started a conversation with my son, and before I knew it, my son was volunteering at Greenpeace, making phone calls to basically save the polar bear, and he worked on a campaign, and it was really sweet because he developed a great sense of pride and accomplishment. And then
that's super.
And then at that time, it was also at the time of the elections, and I was a supporter of another candidate,
uh-huh.
But my son came home and said, you know, I really like this guy, Barack Obama, and I was like, well who's that? And I, you know, he every night would talk about it, and to the point where my husband and I said, my husband did the same thing, he said, yeah, I like him too, and at the same time, Joe Biden was coming to town, and I'm from that area. I spent a lot of time in Delaware, and I've always admired him individually. And when I found out that he was coming to town, I thought, what a treat for my son to actually go to see a town hall. Mm-hmm. And I pulled him out of school, took him there, and it was crowded. It was tons of people getting in line to get in. And while I'm standing in line to get in through the door, my son was running up to all the tables that they had out front and literally signing up to his name on everything, unbeknownst to me. And he went to the rally. He was very excited. He was like, it was like a rock concert for him. Mm-hmm. Really enjoyed it. And then shortly thereafter, he started getting the phone calls. I'd like to speak to Mr. Nylon. I'd like to speak to Mr. Nylon. And I'm like, do you realize he's 8? And but I continued to indulge him a little bit more and started to become his driver. Uh-huh. And so he worked on several campaigns, believe it or not, at that point in time, putting out signs, door knocking, the whole bit. And eventually what happened is his responsibility came so great that because he's in school, I ended up also taking it. And that's when I got started to say, you know what, enough. And one of the things I tease with my husband all the time, because I'm in my mid-40s, and I tease in front of him, and I say, yeah, most people, when they go through a midlife crisis, they buy a car or have an affair. I got involved in politics. And I became so vocal that my husband said, enough. I don't want to have another conversation about it. I don't want to hear about it. So by doing that, I started to write, because that was my way to basically communicate without driving my husband nuts. And that kind of led into, you know, I took a job as a journalist and, you know, started to write on the internet and just became very active. And one of the things that I learned is that you can't just spout an opinion. It has to be grounded in facts. And the more I started...
that's because you're not a Republican.
Well, I'm not so quick to say, you know, Democrat, Republican, Independent, or anything like that, because I when I have a conversation with somebody and I sit down face to face and we talk about the issues, I generally find that there's some common ground. And this is my biggest frustration with our politicians who just want to win a race. They just want to get a vote, and they'll say whatever it takes to the person who's listening to say, yeah, I'm one of you. And the truth of the matter is that people who fall into that and believe that don't really spend any time finding out what the real issues are. They don't invest in getting to know the truth or the facts. And, you know, we had talked about before we went on air, you know, what is my one thing? What is my purpose? And initially, I spent a lot of time pushing renewable energy in the state of Florida because I thought the construction industry was so far gone that I thought, well, this is a great industry to segue into it.
Sure.
And so I spent a lot of time in Tallahassee talking to the politicians, working on pieces of legislation. I did a little bit of work with the EDF, the Environmental Defense Fund. I did a little work locally with communities that focused on making Sarasota a renewable energy community. But I realized that it wasn't enough. A lot of times I go up to Tallahassee and I find that instead of just talking about an issue that the congressman or the senator was going to vote on the next morning, I spent most of my time explaining to them what the issue was. In fact, I even had one senator who came up to me the next morning after our meeting because she was voting on a piece of legislation that I was asking her to take a look at. And she came running up and she said, oh, thank God I ran into you last night. I had no idea what that was about and I just cast my vote. And my mouth just dropped open because I'm like, it's your responsibility to know what you're voting on. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, and I'm not going to totally bash everybody in Tallahassee, but they're not that invested in it either. And so they rely on their legislative aides. You have to educate the legislative aides. You have to educate the public. So if you ask me what my goal is, my goal is to educate, to get the facts out there and let the person on the receiving end of those facts decide for themselves. Because I just think that, you know, we make quick snap decisions on things that just aren't true or aren't realistic.
Well, you know, you bring up so many different topics that are so critical, and I want to share two very brief anecdotes with you to show, I think, a commonality of spirit. When my son, who's now in his mid-30s and a law enforcement officer in the West, he was in middle school and heard a presentation by Greenpeace on the devastating deforestation of South America, in Brazil in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And then the teacher, without really preparing the students on how to write a letter to a public body, asked the kids to write their reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my son, being the passionate young man that he was, much like your own son, wrote a letter saying, you know, this is incredibly thoughtless and a disaster for not just Brazil, but for the planet at large.
Wow.
Respiration is so important. The processing of carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide mm-hmm. into oxygen is so critical for the life forces of the planet. And he signed it, "Your Enemy, Ocean."
Oh.
And the way I found out about this was I got a call from a teacher saying that my son has written an incredibly terrible letter, and the teacher was requesting a conference for us to discuss this. So I thought, you know, this is so unusual because my son mm-hmm. is very reticent and shy and nothing like his father in that sense. He's not an outspoken young man at all. So I was really taken aback. I mean, what could he have written mm-hmm. that would have somehow impressed the teacher this way? I go in to talk to her, and you know, she hands me this letter. And, you know, since I agree that the devastation done by casual lumbering, especially in the Brazilian rainforest, mm-hmm. is terrible.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, I said, let me ask you a question. Did you discuss with the students how to write a letter to the UN? Did you discuss, you know, anything about how to address a public body like that? Or did you just say, okay, now that you're angry, please write something?
Mm-hmm.
And she admitted that, well, yeah, you know, they heard the speech and she asked them to write something. And I said, well, you know, you're talking to 12-year-olds and 11-year-olds. You know, these are young students who, they speak their mind plainly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't know the artifice.
Or the finesse.
either way, I'll go with your word.
well.
to write this in a more professional,
sure.
business-like manner. So I said, you know, I can't understand why you're surprised at this, because I'm sure that there's some passion leaking through several of the letters of young people. Now, maybe
sure.
My son's use of "your enemy."
I think it's great. I mean, that's the one thing that I'm always concerned about, is that we as parents are always trying to stifle our kids with the intent of not offending anyone. But we go to such an extreme that we also inhibit them in their way to actually communicate something that will amount to something.
Well, needless to say, I backed him up 100%.
Well, good for you.
The other point that I wanted to make to you, mm-hmm. My friend Susan, is that many of us who've been around these battles for decades, I'm approaching my sixth decade, and many of us are are more than you might imagine concerned that there's not enough 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds out there.
Oh, absolutely.
Although we all know why that is, because they're making their initial foray into the world, they're trying to establish themselves, they're maybe starting young families.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's all, you know, part of the normal human condition that
sure.
20 and 30-year-olds are busy trying to start a life, and they're not as active typically as people in their 40s and 50s and 60s. And so that's all very normal. But when I heard your story about how you helped your son utilize that enthusiasm, that energy, that drive,
mm-hmm.
that sense that we are on this planet together, that unless we help each other, unless we help the planet, there's
mm-hmm.
not going to be a planet left.
Correct.
And I absolutely support you. And, you know, when many of us older activists talk with, you know, all right, what are you doing to bring younger people in? Well, Susan, you've covered your base.
Well, I thank you. I do want to stop you there and say one thing, though. See, I don't view it that way. I actually think that my son helped me. I mean, he reminded me.
Well, he got you motivated. So.
He brought to light how little I was involved and how quick I was to just write something off. Now, of course, I will bring it around, because now my son's 13, and get him active and passionate outside of his computer games. I'm like, what happened to the little boy? There is an ebb and a flow. I get it now that I'm actually really ingrained in the political process, and I say, oh, you want to do this? Oh, you want to go there? He's like, no, Mom, I'm good. And I'm like, what? So I'm now pulling him back into it. But I agree with you. I think that it's a cliche, but it's a true cliche that if we don't inspire and educate the younger generation, you know, we are going to be a dying species, and that to me is paramount.
Well, it's always important to me as a journalist to help people understand. The ancients used to basically focus very much on character development by telling the stories of those who were noble,
mm-hmm.
of those who evinced the highest societal standards. When I invite guests who are activists, I want people to understand what took them from being just another consumer, minding their own business, trying to live a life, trying
mm-hmm.
to support their family, because God knows that's hard enough. That is hard enough and literally takes more time than most people have in a day just to
yes.
take care of that.
Oh, absolutely.
So I have to have just so much respect for people who, in addition to trying to live a good life,
mm-hmm.
in addition to trying to take care of their family, invest time and energy and attention to trying to help out the world. So I think that's invaluable, and I thank you so much for sharing that part of your story.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you about some of the contemporary issues that that fill the Facebook lines
and
help them sell their ads, and of course that amaze so many of us day by day. Now I have been a practicing human now for low these 50 plus years, and
mm-hmm.
and in many of those years I have had a sexual thought or two, as have
uh-huh.
most people. Now I find the fact that the current Republicans want to refight the battle from the last century of whether humans should have access to birth control, I find that absolutely amazing, and am puzzled beyond words as to why they think this is a good strategy.
It's a terrible strategy, and it's a strategy that is backfiring on them. But it's not something that is new. I mean, for as long as I can remember, especially within the state of Florida, they've always been fighting this battle. I think the difference between years ago and now is that there's a lot more people that think like that, this is the strategy, this is what's going to separate us from them, this is what's going to bring our base in. I think, you know, a few decades ago when the Christian right kind of took over the Republican Party, they decided that's what their calling was. That's the true direction of the party. And unfortunately, as you see right now, it's a very torn party. I mean, it, you know, I have the majority of my family are Republicans. And I could say when I have a and I don't really talk politics too much with my family.
Sure.
They usually avoid me like the plague because they know that it's not an easy win if they take me on. So we don't talk about it. But I do ask them, how do they feel about this? And there's not one of them right now that is confident in the direction of where they're going as a party. And on top of it, we've seen it over in the past couple months, a difference in people who, and I don't think this is necessarily party related, because I've been very big on Facebook right now pushing the fact that this is not a Republican issue, this is not a liberal issue or a Democratic issue, this is an issue for women. And I have to tell you, my entire life I've been fighting the issues of equality for women, which is why I'm so passionate about the equality for the LGBT community, because I can relate to that. From a very early age on, I discovered that there's not only an inequality, but an acceptable inequality. You know, I worked in radio when I first started out after college, and I was probably a lone girl in a sea of man's world. Then I went into construction for a while, and same scenario there. Fortunately, I've learned how to curse like the best of them. But the point is that this movement right now extends beyond politics. I think women are just tired. They're just feeling enough. And I think what's happened is the majority of us have all reached the same age, just like myself, and said, you know what, I'm tired of sitting by and letting somebody else do it for me. I'm not going to take it anymore. And that's what I think you're seeing with Rush Limbaugh. You're seeing that with our state politicians. You're seeing that at the federal level. Women are just reaching out. The Susan G. Komen fiasco, we said enough. It's not about politics. It's about our health care. It's about our life.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was a wonderful part one of the interview with Susan Nylon of the Nylon Report. I want to urge you to check that out again. It's a wonderful chance to hear another progressive voice. She has a wonderful opportunity there in Sarasota to speak both on AM, FM, and the Internet. But without any further ado, I'd like to bring on my next guest, Mr. Luis Cuevas of Progressive Push. Luis, welcome.
Oh, how are you, Rick?
Very good, my friend, very good. And
yourself? Excellent. I'm doing fine, thank you.
Well, you know, it's been a while since we've had the chance to talk. Why don't you tell me what's new up in the Gainesville area?
Well, right up here, it's that time of year that things kind of slow down. Right now, we had a very early spring break, so it's very quiet in town. Folks are beginning to come back in tonight from that, so that the last week there hasn't been much movement. There is still an Occupy movement in the downtown plaza, Bo Diddley Plaza in downtown Gainesville. From Orlando up, we do have Occupy being busy, even though the media won't cover it. They have two rules in media. One of them, corporate media, that is, if there's no news, we make them up, and the other one, if we don't report it, it never happened.
That's right.
So they use those two rules, and this is where it's happening. But for folks who want to know about what Occupy is doing, I would suggest that they take a look at on the Internet. It's called occupynews.blogspot.com. I'll repeat again, it's occupynewsblogspot.com. And whatever is happening with Occupy throughout the country, you will find there. And sometimes it's up to the minute on what is happening or what has happened a few hours ago. People get this idea that where they're looking in the newspaper and there's nothing, but nothing is happening. Oh, no, these young folks... and it's not young either, because we keep that fallacy happening too, that it's just the young. But actually, we have mother, father, daughter, you name it, grandmother, all involved in that. And so, it's from all the different groups of society that we have. In there, and they in the different groups, and they're working hard, they're paying attention, and not only that, they have surprised everybody with the number of ideas and the intellectuality of some of their approaches. But again, the problem is that they're not being covered. And then again, there's other groups that have tried to co-opt the movement, and they refuse to be drawn into that. So that's probably why we don't hear too much from them. But from Oakland all the way to Miami, there is activism.
You know, a couple interesting chunks of legislation have gone through Congress recently, and I've been around and paying attention to this nonsense for a very long time, and I consider myself fairly sober-minded and not quick to panic. But you know, you've got a few solar circles on me, and I want to run something by you.
Sure.
that I regard as a monumental piece of legislation. Mm-hmm. I refer to H.R. 347. Let me just read a little bit of it, and I want to get your reaction, because I regard you as a very much a seasoned activist, a man who's been in for the long pull, and I don't know whether you're going to commiserate with me or you're going to be as concerned as I am, but let me just run some of this by you.
Sure thing.
This was introduced by local congressman, Mr. Rooney, and that should probably tell you pretty much all you need to know. It goes like this. A bill to correct and simplify the drafting of Section 1752 related to restricted buildings and grounds, Title 18 U.S. State Code. Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America, Congress assembled, this act may be cited as the Federal Restricted Buildings and Grounds Improvement Act of 2011. Section 2, Restricted Buildings or Grounds, Section 1752 of Title 18, U.S. State Code, is amended to read as follows. Restricted buildings or grounds, whoever knowingly enters or remains in any restricted building or grounds without lawful authority to do so, knowingly and with intent to impede or disrupt the orderly conduct of government business or official function, engages in disorderly or disruptive content in or within proximity to any restricted building or grounds, when or so that such conduct in fact impedes or disrupts the orderly conduct of government business or official function, knowingly and with intent to impede or disrupt the orderly conduct of government business or official function, obstructs or impedes ingress or egress to or from any restricted building or grounds, or knowingly engages in any act of physical violence against any person or property in any restricted building or grounds, or attempts or conspires to do so, shall be punished as provided in subsection B. B, the punishment of violation of subsection A, the fine under this title, imprisonment not more than 10 years or both, if any person during and in relation to the offense uses or carries a deadly or dangerous weapon or firearm, the offense results in significant bodily injury, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Essentially, it looks to me, my friend, that they're saying if we dare to protest on government grounds,
right,
or we're liable to a 10-year sentence.
Yes. Actually, even further, if you even conspire, you don't even have to do it. If they can come up and say that there is a conspiracy to do any of that, you're still liable. And that started over in California against the Occupy movement in Oakland. And that became one of the charges that they started there. And perhaps you recall that there was this meeting it was a cold conference of the mayors and their people throughout the United States. And they dared to say that it was because they were really so struck by what was happening that they needed to have some therapy. So they got on the phone with each other and said, how can we just put the boot to this thing? And that's what they came up with. And soon you began to see all these charges being drummed up. And what do we come up with? Just make sure that when people are asleep, that's when you raid the camps. Make absolutely sure that when you go in there, you take every single element of all in shock. You go in there, you hit them with SWAT teams, you hit them with sound bombs, you hit them with rubber bullets, everything that you have in at your hands. And right now they're introducing armored war vehicles into the cities for that purpose. So when you're doing that measure of repression, you do need a system of laws to back it up.
Well,
and
you know,
that's what they do.
I like further down in this interesting document, it specifies
mm-hmm.
the areas that are restricted,
uh-huh.
including which is a building or grounds so restricted in conjunction with an event designated as a special event of
yeah.
national significance.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking that, you know, whether we have a military base where they protest the next devastating war,
uh-huh.
or it may be a national convention. I understand there's
right.
one of those coming up in Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
And does that count as conspiracy, you think, Lewis?
That's count, yeah, they would count it as a conspiracy, definitely. But you know what? It goes as far as this. Passing, laws, and in this kind, they almost come up as edicts that they are saying, well, you can't be on the sidewalk in front of the city hall. That's how far they're going. The other one is a young man spent 2 weeks in prison because he used chalk and wrote on the sidewalk.
Right.
And they charge him with defacing and doing, I mean, something that will run off with water. I mean, it was nothing that was permanent. It was nothing that was intended to damage whatsoever. It was just writing with chalk, and that landed him for 2 weeks in jail with common criminals, which is amazing. I mean, that we have dropped to those levels. The other one thing is that when you look at it, it's not only that we have lost habeas corpus in our system. FISA took care of that. And Congress has never had the maracas to come up and replace that and say, no, we just don't do that. That you know, that's the most basic constitutional right that we all have. No, they took that away. It was never put back. And then now they're chipping away at the First Amendment, you see, to the point that the right of assembly has virtually been knocked out. Needless to say, the right of expression, that's limited. The other one thing is with the Internet, they're coming up, and that's the other area of repression they're coming up. You recall, good Senator Joe Lieberman has come in and is on the record for saying that that the government ought to give the president the right to a switch to turn off the Internet anytime that it's necessary.
Yeah, I remember hearing that. And you know, I mean, it may be that I'm a cynical from time to time. I will fall to that level. But it seems to me that the Internet's the best thing they got going.
Yeah.
That the longer we post our messages there and the more we essentially share our stream of consciousness comments,
mm-hmm.
And of course we know now that the FBI and Homeland Security have both admitted on the record that not only do they monitor for, should we say, international terrorist purposes,
mm-hmm.
but they're looking for any criticism,
you're right,
of a Homeland Security and the TSA, and you know, I just wonder what lapse of good conscience has fallen upon these people. They forget they're civil servants.
All right.
They somehow misplaced that idea of peaceably assembled to demand redress of grievance. And mm-hmm. and they certainly don't remember any of what Thomas Jefferson said about
the
purpose of government.
Yeah. But, you know, it's one of the amazing thing is that here we have still the effects of George W. Bush regime. That's what it did. It began the militarization of our police departments. To serve and protect seems to have been lost. Instead, they are looking at the citizen as a prospective terrorist, regardless of what it's for. As long as they exercise their freedom to protest, to complain, to feed the hungry, to give a quarter to a homeless person in the street, all those things have been criminalized now in one way or the other. And so we have all this mentality, which is really falling into the hands of the terrorists, because that's exactly the plan. You turn the government against the people and the people against the government, and you split them and you win. And in this case, some of these people are actually very happy to do these things because there is another, there's a complement to this. And this is the financial gain of a created industry that comes on board. We have corporations that are making money out of this whole thing. And we fail to realize that most of our system that we have for security, that it is actually run by private corporations, that the government is actually contracting out to corporations to run all this information gathering process. If we look back in time, who began to do that? And I don't, if you remember Admiral Poindexter?
Sure, sure.
Yes, of the Iran-Contra.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he was put in charge during the Bush administration of a intelligence gathering little agency,
yep,
in Washington, D.C., to run computer programs to go around and tap anything and anywhere where they could gather any type of information whatsoever. Poindexter is gone out of there, but the guy who appointed him to that, who eventually became a CIA director, they kept put the whole system in place. And if you look at it, a who's who of the intelligence system of the United States, a lot of these folks are now working for private security corporations. And information that they gather from the U.S. government goes into huge computer systems, and of course this goes into data systems that they can access whenever they want to also. So it's becoming a matter of, you put this together with a voting file for people that you already know what magazines they buy, and if they have a motorcycle or not, that's how basic it is.
Yeah.
And you put all those things together, and you right there can pull out what they went to the supermarket and bought, what they went to the drugstore and bought. All that is computerized. They put it together, and they can recreate your entire history from the day you were born to the present time.
Okay. It's sobering scary stuff. It's sobering stuff. And, it puts Obama's failure to prosecute any of the Bush excesses in a different kind of perspective.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at that and the NDAA, his insistence that he can either kill any American anywhere or hold indefinitely without trial.
Amazing.
When you look at what he's done to Bradley Manning and the threats to Julian Assange, I remember... I remember somebody who said they were going to support whistleblowers and march with union men, and we find someone who has in fact prosecuted more whistleblowers and somehow avoided marching with union men. I found myself this past weekend, I got a call from the local Democratic Party, and I have always, my whole life, voted Democratic. I've always was one of those people that urged my good progressive friends and brothers and sisters to not vote third party, not vote Green, not vote, but instead to hold back the Republican corporate interests and vote Democratic.
Mm-hmm.
But I got this call, and they said, Richard, will you once again come in and come to the Obama headquarters and support him? And I said, I can't.
Mm-hmm.
I can't.
Exactly.
I said, I don't care whether you want to talk about NDAA. If you want to talk about the Wall Street behavior, if you want to talk about the prosecution of whistleblowers, if you want to talk about the prejudgment of Bradley Manning, I mean, granted, he has done a couple good things, but
yeah.
When the way they've singled out the progressive movement as an enemy,
mm-hmm.
as an enemy, for that alone, I'm sorry, I said I certainly won't vote Republican, and I probably won't vote Independent. I'll probably still vote for the Obama administration, but I swear to God, I won't lift finger one because I support the Constitution. And this man, call him a constitutional scholar if you must, he doesn't seem like any constitutional scholar I've ever heard of.
That's right. And then, you know, when you think about it, I've taken a practice years ago. That is that I don't give to a party. I give to the candidate I know.
Yeah.
And at Progressive Push, that's what we do. We are an independent national organization. We're not tied to a political party. And we go to the candidate that is the best one, the one who represents our thought process the most. Because, you know, that's what we have to think about. It's not the one who can win. It's who is actually in the same frame of mind that we are in. And I have friends who keep saying that strategically it's okay. I mean, we need to put a blue dog in there because otherwise we get a Republican. I said, well, you're going to get the same exact vote, you know. And let's say there's 435 House seats. Let's say that you get 245 blue dogs in there. What do you have? It's a second Republican Party.
That's right.
They're going to. I mean, what do you think you're getting? Who are you kidding when you do that type of thing? Why do you even bother to write a platform if you completely ignore it? If you let these guys off the hook and you say you can do whatever you want, they step all over progressive candidates. And they just simply, replace them with a blue dog or even a Republican who's turned Democrat 2 weeks before filing.
Yep.
They do that all the time. And right now in Arkansas, we have in Congressional District 1 of Arkansas that Blanche Lincoln is going around supporting Clark Hall, a blue dog like her, to take over the House seat. And they say, well, you know, and they've got the blessing of the DCCC. I say, how are you doing this? I mean, why do you call themselves the Democratic Party if you can call yourself the in name only, you know, the Dino Party?
Right.
Because it's just amazing that they do these things. And then they turn around and they actually support all these things. Granted, there's one thing that I disagree with many of my progressive friends in relation to Obama. To his credit, he's never ever said that he was a progressive. In fact, the campaign, but I say that some progressive organizations actually were the ones who did the campaigning for him as a progressive. He didn't run like one. But he used, of course, the rhetoric. And then these several organizations that they actually meet in the White House, never with the president, but with his, you know, go-do-it people.
Yeah.
They sit around, and what is it that the administration wants? And then they go out and they do it. And they get people to actually, support now, give money now, do that type of thing. When in reality, they should be, you know, sitting down and saying, okay, you want help, this is it, you know. So in many ways, they're collaborating with that type of behavior, aiding and abetting what's wrong.
Let me, there are two other topics I would love to talk to you about briefly. Number one is, I, as much as I support Occupy, and I do, there's one particular trend of Occupy that I personally can't support. I'm a writer, I'm a journalist, I'm a communicator first and foremost, And I like to think that I am an unequivocal supporter of the First Amendment freedom of speech. The thing that I don't like is this mic check phenomena where they go and interrupt a right-wing speaker or a conservative Republican speaker.
Right.
Because, you know, if you're for freedom of speech, you're for freedom of everybody's speech.
Right,
I would
right.
rather defeat him because he spoke his idea than defeat him because someone preempted his speech. I just can't support that. And I'm sure you have common ground with me on that.
Exactly. I think that that is something that started off at the beginning as a tactic to draw attention and then has gotten out of hand. Needless to say, the problem with Occupy is not a monolithic
right.
you know, system.
You
it's just like progressive.
Sure.
Yeah, it's just like progressive. You know, it was what was it that the famous Rogers comedian said about the you know, I don't belong to an organized party, I'm a Democrat.
Right.
You know, so it, the same thing is that Occupy doesn't have a leader, does not have a leadership or a group within it, so that there's all kind of people who actually go out and do things in the name of Occupy that shouldn't.
Let me ask one more question, sir, if I may.
Yeah.
Because I think that we can end on at least a humorous note.
Sure.
What do you think about the Republicans' party's attempt to drag us back to the 19th century?
Oh, but that's home. You know, that's going back home. It's you know, going back home, Alabama, and you know that the Republican Party does have a plan for full employment for all Americans. It's a 19th century. I mean, it's centuries old, but it is slavery.
Yeah.
You know, if we bring back slavery, peonage. Then we will employ everybody.
Well, you know, people thought, you know, when they first started fighting abortion, I said, I got to tell you, in my opinion, the next thing they're going to try to fight is they're going to try to fight contraception. So let me be ahead of the curve one more time. I think the next battle, they're going to want to fight enfranchisement. They're going to want to roll back the right to vote.
Oh, yes. Oh, definitely.
Well, you know,
that. Yeah, they've actually said students should not vote because they don't pay taxes. You know, and they're going after everybody. But one thing is, though, well, they are pushing, you know, laws against contraception and all that. They're really going all out to almost make Viagra a candy. You know, that is, you know, what you. You think about the mentality of these people. You say, what's with you? What is wrong? It's bizarre or beyond bizarre what is happening to these folks. It's incomprehensible. Who's in charge? you know, and then you think, well, yeah, it's kind of, you know, one flew over the cuckoo's nest here.
Well, Newt's going to be there to the bitter end.
Oh, yeah.
And,
well, he's going to the moon.
Thank you so much, my friend, for joining
Thank
me. It's
you,
been a
sir.
Wonderful hour. It's flown by too fast. And I hope to talk to you again real soon, sir.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Okay. And you keep up the good work, brother. We need you.
You too. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've just about come to the end of our hour. I want to remind you one more time. Next Sunday, March 18th, is the 39th Annual Susan B. Anthony Feminist of the Year Award Luncheon in Palm Beach County. The Palm Beach County National Organization for Women has organized it. You know, and I know, how important women's rights are to everyone. Women's rights are human rights. And I want to make sure that my listeners are out there. You go. Make sure that you're there. I will see you there at next week's March 18th. 39th Annual Susan B. Anthony Feminist of the Year Award Luncheon at the Boca Raton Country Club. Contact Palm Beach County National Organization for Women. Get your ticket, and we'll see you there. So on behalf of myself and my good friend and co-producer, Mickey Royce, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. I hope you tune in next week when we have some more exciting progressive guests. And you take care, and we will be talking to you soon. This has been Progressive News Network, brought to you by The Media Goddess and Imagineering Productions. Please support our sponsors. Drop us an email. Let us know. Keep up the good fight, friends. You